I've got to apologize. One reason that I've been putting the scripture reading and the topic a couple weeks ahead is because not only am I pestered about it and asked for it, but I also want to encourage you to read ahead and look at what we're doing. And I had some insightful person contact me, and I didn't catch that they were saying that this scripture reading was messed up. And so it was messed up for about a week, but if you looked at it this week, then you got it figured out. But I apologize for that. If you see that, by the way, let me know. Maybe I did it on purpose to see if you were reading, but not that time. I didn't do that. I really appreciate how everybody's keeping up with the reading. Us getting to study together is very encouraging, and we can study together even in our own homes. So I think that's interesting. Now, what we're talking about tonight didn't come directly from our read the Bible through in a year, unless you want to count from the first day that we were reading. But I did want to address something that we've been hearing more and more about, and I wanted to try the best I could in this next month to help shape our perspectives about it as we're looking at Scripture. Because whenever we look at the world around us today, especially the arguments that we're having about racial relations, things get more confusing the more that you hear about them. When you think you have it figured out, it seems like someone has a new take on it, and you just can't be right. Well, there's only one person right about race, and that's God. And if we agree with him and we try to practice what he teaches us, then we can be right about this issue of racism in our time today. So we're going to take some time through this next month and look at it. And I wanted to look at this under the overall theme of the races won at the cross. And that's just the fact of it from the beginning. I wanted to look at what the end of this is going to be, and that is the races won at the cross. And we truly win in this life only when we come to Christ through his redeeming sacrifice. And that's this race of life. And as far as the human race goes, we're all united. And we're going to look next Sunday night at how we're equalized by sin. The Sunday after that, how salvation is freely allowed to all. And then finally, what do we do? What should our response be if we are mistreated for something that we should be or something that we really can't help? How should we respond to that? And so that's what we're looking at in the next 3 weeks. So if you want to look ahead at that, by all means, do it. I'd appreciate any type of input about it. We're going to start today looking at the origin of racism. Now, this isn't meant to be an historical thesis on the origin of it. We're not going to look at that, but I wanted to more deal with philosophically where does racism come from? Because if we can find that, we can learn simply how to avoid it in a way. See how we're thinking. Your philosophy is how you view life, and everybody has one. Even somebody who says, well, I don't have a philosophy, well, that's sort of your philosophy, I guess. But we want to view our lives through the lens that God's given us in his word. We want to try to view our lives as much from an eternal perspective of God as we can. And so what do we find as we look at it that way, and where do we see that racism comes from? And I wanted to start with a strange source for me to quote, and that is a quote from the UN. But of all things that they say, this is actually something I agree on. Now, hear me out. They said, basically, there's no basis for racism. This is their quote. The UN is convinced that any doctrine of superiority based on racial differentiation is scientifically false, morally condemnable, socially unjust and dangerous, and that there is no justification for racial discrimination in theory or in practice anywhere. I agree with that. They're right. The funny thing is, so many of the other things they believe contradict that. They say that it's scientifically false when at the same time they believe in an earth that's billions of years old, and they teach other things regarding the change of the climate and things like that. Morally condemnable based on what? Where do they believe that morals come from? And that's another place that they have a difficulty with. And as far as the things they consider socially just and unjust and dangerous, this would be one thing I agree with them on, but many other things, they go way off base pretty quickly. But I just wanted to start there because it's interesting. We live in a time where one thing is typically agreed on. That's racism is bad. People might not agree on what it is. They might not agree on who is and who isn't racist. But we agree that racism is bad. Even the UN and all the things that they would contradict scripture on, they agree that racism is bad. Now, that's why I wanted to start with that. And I wanted to go ahead and give this premise, and that is I believe we can show that racism was created by man. And specifically, if you recognize this image behind me, this is a common image that's been put in textbooks to illustrate the supposed rise of man in the evolutionary chain from a common ancestor of the chimpanzee. And so we're very familiar with this, from this chimp-type animal over here all the way over to this upright human that we call today Homo sapien. And this is something that's taken about the last 5 million years or so to happen, a little before that, depending on what kind of wiggle room you give them. But these are some things that are commonly taught. And as we look at that, I believe we can show that the theory of evolution implies that there are inferior races. I want to be real clear. I'm not saying that. The theory of evolution, I believe, can be shown to be false. But the theory of evolution implies that there are inferior races. And whenever we allow man to have the assumption that macrobiological evolution is true, that is, these slow changes through time that cause something to go from one species to another, then what we've done is we've set up a foundation that allows for the idea that this person is a less evolved form of human being than this person. And therefore, they're not as good in some ways. That's founded in evolution. So let's look at why I say that as we bear it out. First of all, the image that you see here on the right, it is a little branch of the tree that represents evolution, called the. This is looking at common ancestry, and as you come back down here, the words that you can't see, don't worry about it too much. I'll explain it. But the farther down on the branches you go, the farther back in time you go. And each of these is considered to be from a common ancestor further down the line. So here's a human on the right, here's an orangutan on the left. And so the farther away you get, the less like human, according to this, it is. And so a few ancestors ago, according to this tree, the orangutan and the human split off from a common ancestor. And then you go back up to about 6 to 8 million years ago, and the gorilla and the human branched off from each other from a common ancestor up to here where you have the chimpanzee and the human who branch off from a common ancestor according to this. And so the orangutan's farther from human, and the chimpanzee, according to this theory, is closer to human. And that's why we have to be careful if we're trying to have a discussion with someone who believes in evolutionary theory. They don't say we came from a chimpanzee. They'll catch you on a technicality and say we came from the common ancestor of a chimpanzee. If I have an uncle and you have the same uncle, yeah, you're right. We don't come from our uncle. But we're still, that still makes us related. It's common ancestor. But that's the way they talk about it. In evolutionary theory, this is a tiny little simplified branch of the whole tree. Here's a little more of the tree. Again, don't worry about the words that you can't make out. I'll just explain it in general. Here we are up just as animals. We'd be considered up there. We share at this point a common ancestor with fungus and plants. And then you get back to slime, mold, back here. This is the split where bacteria is, and this is the common ancestor of us all, that single-cell organism that came from somewhere. And I do this to show that the farther back you go, according to the evolutionary theory, the simpler, the farther from human things get. And so the farther along the line you shared a common ancestor, the less human the thing is that split off from that. And so what we just looked at was way up here on the top of this little branch, because we'd be considered sort of the top of the animal species there. And way down here somewhere, we share, according to this, a common ancestor with plants and fungus. So that's that. Now we're going to zoom back in up here to this tree. And whenever you look at the fact that the longer ago one split from a common ancestor, the farther it is from human, that's where I have one place I have a big problem with biological evolution. And that is because this is what they believe. This is just, we have to say, well, what about this? What about when somebody's saying that they've studied, and what's it mean the racial differences are when they say the Australian racial group split off from a common ancestor about 400,000 years ago. By the same theory, the Mongoloid originated about 100,000 years ago, the Negroid and Caucasian groups about 40,000 years ago. They're talking about common ancestors, the same kind of reference that they're saying we're from the common ancestor of a chimpanzee. And so you've got the chimpanzee over here and over here, but much farther along, the orangutan split off before that. Well, when we get farther up the branch to humans, it's saying, well, these humans are older, they're farther down the evolutionary chain than these other humans. So what's the implication of that? And except that they're not as evolved as other humans. And some talk I've heard recently is that there is a species of further evolved humans that we're recognizing called Homo sapiens sapiens. That is, they're smarter and they're faster and they have better, more efficient brain capacity and just overall healthier, more fit for living today. And if that doesn't mean that the Homo sapiens are inferior, then what does it mean? And evolutionary theory, then, as it's commonly taught, does allow for that. But what do people make of this? What could such thinking cause? As you break it down, there's a practice that's still in effect that's called eugenics. Eugenics stands for good gene. And a man named Sir Francis Galton, a cousin of Charles Darwin, writer of Origin of Species, was one who considered breeding humans like animals to get desired offspring. Think about that. So just like you think, well, I want this quality in an animal, you say, well, I want these qualities in a human, except he even took it to how smart people were and how much money they could make and to that point. And this was in 1863. And this led to a practice that especially came in the United States called eugenics. In the early 1900s, we'd forcibly sterilize 60,000 people based on their race because we wanted to try to get their inferior race out of the gene pool. Now, I'm saying these things, by the way, if this is listened to on tape, a so-called inferior race. I don't believe there's an inferior race, but this is the reason that they were forcibly sterilized. They were to eliminate unfit races. It was about 30 years before Hitler would use the same kind of thinking that motivated the Holocaust. Why did Hitler do that? Because if you got rid of what you would consider to be a less evolved race, and all that you were left with was the best of evolution, then from a strictly evolutionary standpoint, you're doing the world a favor. That's not right. I'm not saying that's good. But what I'm saying is that that's the logical next step. Hitler was trying to help evolution along by keeping what he considered the best races around and getting rid of the worst races. And if you think that's scary, think that there was a list that we had in the United States in the early 1900s of ideas to reduce what they considered to be inferior races, only the least of which seemed to be sterilization and controlled marriage and breeding, the way they looked at it. But included was also gas chambers and also introducing some extreme hazard to the environment that only a few people would live through. And what we're talking about is things like biological warfare, where you introduce a disease to the United States and anybody who's living is considered a superior species because they survived it and everyone else didn't. And so these were things that were talked about in the early 1900s, and it was based on this idea that there are some races of human beings that are better than others. And if that's not racism in the clearest form, then I don't know what is. But that's based off of evolutionary thinking. Now, as we look at it further, I want to talk about quote-unquote race started with God. Not racism, but race started with God, if you want to call it that. And I want to take just a look as we talk about our first couple, Adam and Eve. They were heterozygous. Now, you thought they were humans. No, that doesn't mean they weren't humans. They were humans, and they were heterozygous, which means when you're looking at this chart up here, this is a simplified chart that relates to the genetics that has to do with our skin color, which, oddly enough, the more you look at it, it's funny because it's not actually our skin color, it's the amount of melanin we have in our skin. If you would remove the melanin from someone's skin, they're the same color as everybody else, you would take the melanin out of their skin. The melanin in our skin is what allows our skin, what affects how our skin handles UV light. So someone with a great deal of melanin in their skin gets darker, and someone with less melanin in their skin doesn't. So isn't it interesting, in a technical sense, science today has shown that we actually don't have colors. We just have different ranges in melanin that change the color that our skin can be based on our exposure to UV light. And whenever you look at it, a rough way to examine it is each person has these sets of genes, and that is we have an AA and a BB. And those have dominant and recessive. On this chart, the dominant's represented by the capital A, and the recessive gene is represented by the lowercase a. So here in the top left, you have the double recessive A and double dominant A, double dominant B. In the bottom right, you have the double recessive A, double recessive B. This top left represents the highest amounts of melanin in the skin, which would lead to the darkest skin tone. And the bottom right refers to the lightest skin, the least amount of melanin in the skin, which would lead to the lightest skin tone. Now, why do I bring that up? Interestingly enough, if you look at a world that we understand to be true from Scripture, God created Adam and Eve, and they were the only two people, somebody says, well, how could they make every single color that we see here? And as we look at simple genetics, Adam and Eve being heterozygous, there, I have to look at that word for a second, heterozygous means that they have different, that is, dominant and recessive A's and B's. Adam and Eve are right here. Dominant A, recessive A, dominant B, recessive B. And if we would imagine Adam and Eve being made perfectly, and they were, God created them, and it was good, then we would find that Adam and Eve, being the first two, didn't have any mixture of genetics, and so they would be, we might say, 100% zygous. And their zygosity, and that's actually a word that's going to be on the next slide, their zygosity would be 100%. Now, a guy at the University of California was talking about somebody with 6.7% heterozygosity. That is, they are like Adam and Eve, but only 6.7% like Adam and Eve. And he said that the average person today has about a 6.7% mixture of genes in them that changes the color of melanin. He said if you started the world with two people that were only 6.7% sort of like Adam and Eve, with how many different types of colors of skin someone could have, he says a couple would have a 1 times 10 to the 2017th power of children before two shared identical skin color. The probability of them having two kids that have identical colors of skin is 1 in 10 to 217,000 power. I bring that up for this reason. Whenever you write that out, that's a 1 with 2017 zeros after it. That's what that is up there. And this little part that I have highlighted up here, this is 10 billion. That's almost 3 billion more people than we have in the entire world. And so I just wanted to look at this because if we're looking at this number, which is a number that's beyond any kind of comprehension, we see that by far Adam and Eve, with the perfect, being perfectly made as they were, if they both had a recessive and dominant of both A's and B's for melanin and skin, they could certainly populate a world of people that have all different colors of skin. That's not disputed scientifically whatsoever. It's perfectly possible. And it actually makes sense that this wasn't very long ago. Why? Because the longer we go on filling the world and intermixing people with different colored skins, the more homogenized a lot of different skin types become. And there actually seems to be less and less variety as things go on. And so if we'd been around here for 5 million years, we'd probably just have a few different kinds, because after someone has these two dominant genes, they can't reproduce. If there was somebody else who has all dominant genes, they can't reproduce someone with recessive genes. And likewise, just with all the recessive, they can't reproduce someone with just with dominant genes. But there's enough of a mixture of those heterozygous genes that they're all different types of colors. Another interesting thing as we look at it, whenever we look at God's creation, Adam and Eve, they could have very well been made, and this is likely what the case is, with just these genes for this mix, and God made many colors, but that's all what we call race is. And this is why I say this. We often divide people by colors when we're talking about races. And in fact, though, when you boil it down, it's often a simple way to refer to who someone is, like that white-haired lady. If you're trying to describe who someone is and you're trying to narrow it down for someone, don't engage in this. And I've had someone do it before. We have camp down in Ritchie County, West Virginia. I grew up there, and there was literally one black family in the county when I was growing up. And so when we had camp, it wasn't surprising that we don't have many black campers. And I had a staff member who said, "Oh, I can't think of his name. He's about this tall, and he has curly hair, and I said, "Is he black?" And they said, "Yes." I said, "Oh, you're talking about so-and-so." They avoided it so much, but all it is, when we boil it down scientifically and biblically, it's a different color of skin. And here's what I mean. Somebody's going to say, well, different races have a variety of heights and a variety of lip shapes and nose shapes and types of hair. But when you look at a nose shape, a lip shape, a type of hair, there is that represented in every color of human being too. You can find a height and a shortness represented in every color of human being, and we try to align them by race, but what you'll find, the more you study evolutionary science and races, the more it all blurs together, because they come to a point where you say, ah, well, you have this person that has this color skin, their nose is shaped this way, and they're very different looking, this person that has the same color skin, and they both look sort of like this one that has a different color skin. And it all points to the idea of us coming from the same people, because it all blurs together, when in fact, as we look at it then, God only made one race. He made the human race. And we happen to come in different shapes and colors, and we made up this idea that there was a distinction in some way, which is really purely man-made and purely based off of this theory of evolution. As we look at it, somebody might say, "Ah, well, no, I think racism came from the Bible," somebody might say, because what about how exclusive God told his people to be, and what about the prohibitions against intermarriage in the Old Testament? And those things can certainly be brought up, and we should address them. It's interesting, because I wanted to see how people misused this, and as I was searching it, I thought I found one article. It said what the New King James says about interracial marriage, and it actually just put some verses that didn't really deal with race at all. And I thought that was odd, and I kept digging, and here's some things that I found out. One, there is an exclusivity talked about in Scripture, and intermarriage is discouraged. In Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 3, we see the crux of the reason why. Deuteronomy 7, 3. As he's talking to them about what to do when they cross into the land, he says, "Nor shall you make marriages with them," and this is the people who would go in and conquer their land. And look at why. "You shall not give your daughter and their son, nor take their daughter for your son." Verse 4, "For they will turn your sons away from following me, to serve other gods, so the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly. Note a couple things. It doesn't say a thing about race. It's talking about the nations and the land that it is going to. Two, it doesn't say you're not allowed to marry them because they're a different color. It doesn't say you can't marry them because they are a different race. It says don't intermarry with them because they practice a religion that will take you away from God. And Deuteronomy 25, 5 and 6 is another exception where you have a woman whose husband's died without having any children. And she's not permitted to marry outside of her people. Not because of race, color of skin, but because if she does, then her husband doesn't have any kind of progeny. He doesn't have any kind, anybody to hand an inheritance down to. And if you lost people to give an inheritance to, it was similar to your family losing land, because the land was connected to your inheritance. It was connected to your family, to your tribes. And so that's why it's put in place in Deuteronomy chapter 4. It was to preserve the true religion of God, not to preserve anything about race. Now that's very clearly, very simply what it was. Someone might say, but when you get to the New Testament, the Jews hate the Gentiles. Well, they don't hate them because of their race. In fact, the Gentiles were all different kinds of races, and races that were similar to the Jews even. And they didn't even hate them justly. They didn't dislike them based on God's will. Whenever you look at it, it's interesting because I found one, two, three, these four verses here that actually talk about how strangers were to be treated well. He says, because you were once strangers in Egypt. But I want to look specifically at Leviticus 19:34. Leviticus 19:34. It says, the stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself, for you are strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. I've even heard brethren say, the God of the New Testament is different than the God of the Old Testament. That's not true. It might seem like we see much more destruction and violence in the Old Testament. The covenant was different. But he was still the same God of grace and love then, and he said, you love stranger as you would love yourself. He doesn't say, treat someone wrong because they're different than you and they're a different color. And this idea of caring for the stranger is repeated in these other verses. And so when we put it all together, we see that God had a plan for mankind. And it didn't have to do with race. It had to do with bringing his son into this earth. And in Galatians chapter 4, we read about Jesus when it was just the right time, being born under the law, and he lived sinlessly under the law. And this nation was kept together solely to bring him to this earth to die for all of mankind. And here's an interesting thing. Actually, the King James Version has race four times, and it never has to do with the color of someone's skin. It's always talking about running. You can't find race in the Bible as we talk about it today. So if somebody tries to talk about a religion and being racist, those two things, true biblical religion, can't be racist because the idea of race isn't even in here. And now, we ourselves, unfortunately, we can be introduced, ideas can be introduced to us, and we can sadly take them on, in which case we've got a problem because we don't see God distinguish between people because of the amount of melanin that's in their skin. So as we look at it in the next few weeks, we're going to come to more and more of a biblical balance on this. And I hope from the get-go, we've already looked at the idea that the Bible doesn't even teach about different races of people. There's one race, and it's the human race. And we, looking at that, can be more concerned then with looking at someone's soul than the color of their skin. And that can help us whenever we're dealing with things in regards to our race relations, as the world likes to look at it. Genesis chapter 1, when we go back to the scripture reading, it says in verse 27, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Every human being is created in the image of God. And as such, every human being begins on this level playing field, equal in value and creation, given value by none other than God. And when we take that away, we become, just like it talks about in Romans chapter 1:21, thinking we're wise, we've become fools. And that would be the epitome of a world that says that racism's wrong and that we evolved from chimpanzees. And so if this is something you might be dealing with someone with, or maybe you want to learn more about, one reason we come together is to encourage each other. If this has caused you to think about something, make sure you ask more about it. Study more about it. I'd be happy to talk about it. If you need our prayers, we're here to pray together. If you need to respond to the invitation of Christ, an invitation open to everyone, an invitation needed by everybody who can hear it and understand it, then you can do that this evening. But let us know what your need is by having a seat as we stand and sing the invitation song.